It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running on this 22nd day of September 2021. You probably don't really, well, you certainly don't know this, but I've already said everything I'm saying right now, but that's because we had a power outage here, and I forgot once again that when the computer shuts down, it forget a couple of my interfaces, forget everything that they thought they knew, and I forgot to reset the, yeah. So my apologies. Starting about 17 minutes late. Thanks for letting me know I'm actually on the air, Jack, down at Shreveport. Thank you. And thank you, Randy Radar, for the throw the third switch, Robin, because I saw that and I was like, wait a minute, I threw the third switch, but it didn't stay thrown or it, whatever. This one's on me. My apologies. Quick program note. There will be no program tomorrow because I'm going to be part of a human library project. Looking forward to it. My apologies for not being here. But I have an urgent communique from Dave number 11. We got any cribbage players out there? Anybody? Dave number 11 says, meanwhile, down at the senior center, Dave number 11 finds himself in a pickle. Dear Robin, I'm playing cribbage for the first time and am being told I am to give one for his knob at various times. It seems sometimes Jack has a knob that needs serviced, and sometimes he doesn't. It can be that way, I guess. My opponent's assertion is that the act is worth a tally of one on the scorecard. I need some clarity. High clarity. No, wait, that's off topic. Sorry, but I'm befuddled and bewildered. Well, at least you're not bewitched. Is a knob like en passant or something? Please reply quickly. We would have replied more quickly, Dave, save for the fact that, well, we had a power outage here and the antiquated, rusty, rickety, etc., coal-fried power grid went out for hours, and we only started rebooting the studio about a half an hour ago now. But anyway, please reply quickly, as I have pressed every hand and owe a bit of currency. Truth be told, I am currently on the hook for either $36,000.06 or nothing, pending the outcome of this mysterious Jack's level of satisfaction. Minus the knobs, the score is tied one short of the finish line. You know, this sounds like it's every bit as complicated as keeping up with cricket. The suit of the Jack is diamonds, if that helps. I'm anxiously awaiting the assistance of the Horn community. Signed, Dave number 11, CC. Novice player questions, cribbage today. Okay, Ralphs says she's played cribbage. Any help is good help here. Because we don't, that's not the kind of hole Dave number 11 needs to be in. And every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. This program is no different, so consequently, thanks go out to our 22nd day of the month PayPal subscribers. That means thanks to Colin. Thank you so very kindly. Thank you, Colin, and thank you to Felicia, formerly of Nebraska, now of Southern California, San Diego-ish, I think. Hi, Felicia. And thanks as well to Joan in Talibandiana. Thank you, Joan, so very kindly. And thank you to Andrew. Between Andrew and Joan, they managed to knock down the fundraising goal considerably. So we find ourselves at the fundraising goal to get all the way caught up of $622. And if Larry and Liberalville's $111 Freedom Through Unity challenge gets met, well, we'll be down to $400, which means we'll have everything funded except for $100 worth of yesterday and then today. So thank you. Thank you, one and all. And hopefully we'll knock down that challenge in fairly short order. Okay, I don't know cribbage, but I didn't think cribbage had lifelines. Well, it does now. Look, this is a full-service radio network. And yes, you can use your phone a radio network if you want it when needed, because there are knobs involved. I mean, come on, please. Wow. Okay. Thank you. Rico says, I'm just listening to Tuesday's pod and wanted to jump in on Larry's challenge. I'm putting in $222 on it, and Buddha bless him. Signed, Rico, in the still quiescent summer of DeBerg. Oh, I hope you're enjoying summer, because we're not. Fall came in here with real eagerness. Part of the reason that I was not on the air on time is strictly because equated rickety, held together with spit and toilet paper and baling wire, coal-fried power grid of Appalachian Power decided to run and hide under the bed when the wind blew. And it came on about 10 minutes before airtime here, and had everything booted up, and then I forgot that, you know, the interface, the sound card, well, Jesus, stuff. Fully funded commercial enterprise broadcasting has engineers for, but it's just me. Thank you, Rico. Thank you so very kindly. It's been gray and cold and windy here. I was going across the bridge earlier today, and I got blown from the right lane into the left lane, and that is an unnerving sensation, without a doubt. It looks like some people are feeling about Bridge Day the same way I was, and still am. There will be no base jumping at Bridge Day this year, which means there will be no one parachuting off of the bridge. I think another enterprise has just pulled out of it, because, now, granted, Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice said, in no way, shape, form, or fashion do I have the power to say we should or should not have Bridge Day. I do have the power, and we're going to have Bridge Day. Wait a minute, what? It's a local decision? Well, bust my buttons. Well, that's a local decision, and they're... So it's really screwed up. The hospitals are absolutely overwhelmed. If somebody gets hurt, and somebody always gets hurt during Bridge Day, there's no room at the ER for them. But Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice did provide something on the order of a $100,000 grant for a medical tent in case anybody gets injured. Oh. And I remain absolutely kind of astonished, because when you stop to think about the fact that 20 years ago, we shut down Bridge Day because the state of West Virginia, and curiously, the state of West Virginia shut it down. We shut down Bridge Day because we were desperately afraid that a 6-foot-7-inch tall Saudi man with a portable dialysis machine was going to blow up the New River Gorge Bridge. And so we shut down, but we can't do it for a deadly pandemic that has killed more people than the 1918 flu pandemic killed. We can't, no. Oh, what's that, Matt? Matt in San Francisco says, power out, my fault. I think it's my fault for the late start. I was late joining today. Therefore, since I'm responsible for the Bay Agenda and all the gay agenda and all that it affects, I must confess I am responsible for the late start of the program. I'll try to do better in the future. That's okay. Sometimes you're the mickle powers of the community get a little bit out of hand, and I well played, Matt. Well played. Randy Radar says, all I know about cribbage is that if you have a bunch of fives in your hand, then you're in great shape. Look for fives, Dave number 11. Look for fives. But we still don't know about the knob polishing. It's not knob polishing. No, quit it. It's the Jack's knob, yeah, what? I'm lost. Now I got to go learn how to play cribbage. Oh, dear God. As if I weren't busy enough. Yeah. So that's where we start. And by the way, so Larry in Liberalville's challenge has been met, and that means we are down to $400 to come up even with fundraising for the week so far. Thank you. Thank you so much, Rico. And yeah, who knows? Maybe we could get all the way even as the deacons pass the heavy brass velvet-lined plates with the PayPal button in the bottom. Remember, go to headon.live if you want to help out. Thank you so much to everybody who keeps all of this going and helps to keep the stress off of me. I understand stress. How about that? I didn't know that. Jeremy in Vermont says, Osama bin Laden never had a dialysis machine. It was something Special Forces made up to know if people were lying about sightings. I'll be darned. That's interesting. So where it is prayer meeting Wednesday, and we'll get to the preaching and speeching here in a little bit, because God knows we got some top shelf shit. But I just wanted to mention something out of something that happened in the Congress yesterday. A bill was advanced in the House to deal with the debt limit and the debt ceiling, because we're coming up on that, and it appears that the Republicans are all on board with shutting the government down. One of the more interesting aspects of it, or one of the more crucial aspects of it, is the part of the debt ceiling increase is for a financial response to people who got the living shit kicked out of them by Hurricane Ida, as well as effects of the Trump pandemic. But I closed the program yesterday talking about how every now and then, you know, we have this sensation of being so far ahead of the curve that we feel like we're on straight road. Did I do the "Hi, I'm Robin" part in when I started the program again for the second time? Well, I am. This is another one of those moments. Toward the close of yesterday's program, we were talking about how we discussed on this program months back the fact that the whole virus was a Chinese bioweapon thing, seemed like a desperate attempt to crank up a casus belli against China, because, you know, the United States starting a war against China would be so smart. I mean, after all, the entire population of the United States is a fucking rounding error compared to the Chinese population. Yeah, sure. Good idea. We got another one today, because you know how Adam Kinzinger, and you know how we talked on this program about I don't care what she says about January 6th, I wouldn't trust Dick in a Wig Cheney, Liz, Daddy's little deferment. I wouldn't trust her with the carcass of a runover skunk. Well, I was right, because when it came time to actually vote to help the American people, Adam Kinzinger and Dick in a Wig Cheney said, fuck y'all. We're fiscal conservative Republicans, and we're going to vote against actually doing anything fucking decent for suffering Americans, some of whose houses are still underwater. Oh, it's that time of year, is it? I love the smell of two-cycle oil in the afternoon. No, I don't. I don't at all. But no, but that's the thing that happened. So, you know, to every member of the for-profit media who waxed poetic or got a tingle down their leg or got that fluttery feeling in the pit of their stomach over Dick in a Wig and Adam Kinzinger for being never Trump Republicans, I told you. Tigers never change their stripes, nor do skunks. And so there they were, voting to fuck America, just like the Republicans that they are. The bill passed, It will now go and die with Moscow Mitch McConnell's hands around its neck, capably assisted by people like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, because they are why we can't have nice things. Yeah. The cribbage questions continue. Is there some, Jack in Shreveport said, isn't there some kind of board with lots of little holes, and aren't there a lot of little wooden pins or pegs to be put into the little hole? Yes. Okay, so but still no cribbage help thus far. There seems to be a paucity of cribbage knowledge. I've got a handy link here from Ralph's, but I don't know that I've got time to digest it all. Damn it, Matt, says Steve in New York. You're revealing too much. Some decorum, please. Well, I mean, that was an executive-level decision. Because, after all, Matt is in charge of the gay agenda. Gold star gay man that he is. So, it was his call, Steve. Let's not upbraid Matt. At least I've got a reason for it, and that helps. I know it wasn't my cosmic trans powers, so there's that. Nah, Republican's gonna Republican. And they're just... Sometimes I feel bad for the for-profit media, because they are so easily snookered. No, cribbage, not snooker. We're not talking... But they are. They're so easily snookered that... You just feel like that. Well, they probably would wind up in a bad spot in a cribbage game too. Yeah. So that's just just a little bit of a beginning space for where we are this prayer meeting Wednesday. A bunch of other stuff too. You know, one of the problems with being a maggot is that sooner or later, you will be hoisted upon your own petard. For instance, down in Talabama, they've got a maggot attorney general by the name of John Merrill. And, of course, there's Governor Meemaw as well, both of whom received a visit from Mike Mr. Meth Pillow Lindell, and because he wanted to explain to them how the election got stolen. Sunday he put up a video, Mike Mr. Meth Pillow Lindell did, and he said, "This was the one time we're going to have to do a little bit of a deeper dive here. On the surface, you can't see where it happened. What I guarantee they've had to do in Alabama is the bad people went deeper into the well, very deep in the well of how they did the flips." And... this is, meth is bad for your brain, and it makes your brain think funny things, funny, in the head, funny. Just as a matter of reviewing things, Alabama did not go for Joe Biden by any remote measure, and Alabama's Republicans survived and prevailed, okay? There are almost no Democratic office holders in Alabama. There are a couple, but not many. Terry Sewell continues to represent a profoundly gerrymandered district in Alabama. But no, according to Mr. Meth Pillow, every single county in Alabama saw 100,000 votes changed over the, 65 counties in Alabama? 100,000 votes were flipped. Now, here's the problem. Nitwit Nero won Alabama by 600,000 votes. And meanwhile, John Merle is as maggoty as maggot can get. But there's no depth or there's no bottom, I should say, to the depraved or the well of political depravity that is maggot world. That you can never be maggot enough. And so now, the maggot Attorney General of Alabama, I'm sorry, Secretary of State, my bad. I don't know why I was saying Attorney General. Secretary of State of Alabama, maggoty as hell, finds himself in the position of having to take issue with his master. Because, of course, Mr. Meth Pillow Lindell speaks for Nitwit Nero. So he was put in this awkward position. And Secretary of State John Merrill said, "All our voting machines are custom-built. There's no modem component. You can't influence them through a cell phone or a landline. There's no way they can be probed or numbers manipulated. We didn't have any vote changes. Zero. It's not possible to have any vote changed." Right. Okay. Because don't you figure Nitwit Nero wouldn't have won Alabama and all those Republicans wouldn't have been returned to office? We really, because if Mr. Meth Pillow Lindell's theory is correct, our side is really, really, really terrible at election stealing. Bad, you might even go so far as to say. So now, I'm sure there'll be mean tweets about John Merrill. Maybe he'll start getting hate mail and threatening notes like the chief public health officer of the state of Mississippi, Stan, that we talked about last night. "Your daughter-in-law's getting paid by the Chinese because they weaponized the bioweapon because... And yet it doesn't matter how much denying John Merrill, Secretary of State of Alabama, does. Maggots ain't going to believe it. No. Because they get in line, and when they're told to march, they fucking march. Because they're maggots. Meanwhile, north of Alabama lies Tennistan. And Tennistan has a governor's COVID task force. Yes, they do. And on that governor's COVID task force in Tennistan is a doctor by the name of Sarah Cross. And she is an infectious disease specialist. The governor of Tennistan is, of course, Bill Lee. Now, that's not the same as Bill Spaceman Lee of baseball legend. No, this is just a maggot governor in Tennessee. Well, CNN invited Dr. Sarah Cross on for an interview with Victor Blackwell. And they had a rather revealing little conversation. Of course, Tennistan has horrible vaccine rates and horrible vaccine numbers and deaths. And it would seem that maybe the governor's COVID task force is not getting much done. You might recall they attacked. They attacked public health officials in Tennistan for suggesting, for, you know, even advertising that 16-year-olds could get their COVID vaccines. "You're taking away our children's freedom." Yeah, because there's nothing more free than being horizontally crucified with a garden hose down your throat. Yes, Steve, you heard that right. 100,000 votes flipped across 65 counties. Yeah. 100,000 votes flipped. I mean, that's the way it was written up. in 100,000 votes in each of the counties of Alabama. So one could, as Steve understands it, one could see that as 6.5 million total flipped votes out of 1 million, about 2.2 million votes actual cast. A total of 2,390,794 total votes with 6.5 million flipped ones. Well, I think somebody's flipped, and I think we know who the flipped person is. That would be Mr. Meth Pillow Lindell. Mm-hmm. But anyway, let's check in with Victor Blackwell and Dr. Sarah Cross down in Tennistan. This is sort of revealing.
Now ranks second in the nation for new COVID cases per 100,000 residents, averaging more than 3,000 per day. That's according to the White House. State officials are now recommending that healthcare providers prioritize unvaccinated COVID patients for treatment in certain situations. Joining me now is Dr. Sarah Cross. She's an infectious disease specialist and a member of Tennessee Governor Bill Lee's COVID task force. Thank you for being with me. Let me start here with this decision on prioritizing monoclonal antibody treatment for those who are unvaccinated. The state says that it's following NIH recommendations that except for those who are immunocompromised, that this should be reserved for those who are unvaccinated. You think that's the right call for people who've chosen not to get the vaccine, that they get this treatment?
Well, first, thanks so much for having me.
It's always nice. You got to do that. Thank you for having me on. Yes. But have you heard this? If you have a case of the Rona and you're having trouble and you're vaccinated, and I hope I am not spreading disinformation here. This is the way I've read it and the way I've understood it since I found out about this like last night. If you are vaccinated and you have a breakthrough case and you have trouble breathing, you cannot get, in many instances, you cannot get the Regeneron monoclonal antibody treatment because it's being reserved for people who are unvaccinated and get it. This is infuriating. You would think that people who actually did the responsible thing and got the goddamn vaccine would be most eligible for the monoclonal antibody treatment, which is, in fact, in short supply. Because I've kind of gotten to that point, and many of us in the community have as well, that really, unless there is some genuinely compelling reason why someone could not get the vaccine, because it's free to anybody who wants it, it has been made widely available in the United States. President Biden, by the way, today literally doubled the number of doses that the United States is providing to countries in need, moderate wealth to low wealth countries. The U.S. was previously committed to providing 500,000 doses. Now, 500. President Biden doubled it, and we will be giving away 100 million vaccine doses throughout the world. Now, on a planet that has a population of billions, one could say that is a drop in the bucket, but it is still something, especially if it goes to countries that are direly in need. So the idea, really, is our sympathy for the unvaccinated at a state of near, if not complete, exhaustion? And is that not justified? I mean, think about it. You refuse the vaccine, probably burbled something about Bill Gates, 5G, barcodes, magnetism, burble, burble, burble. And this. You go to the head of the line for monoclonal antibody treatment. There will be we're already in a place where vaccinated people are dying of things that maybe they wouldn't die of. You know, a heart attack, can't get treatment. Car wreck, can't get treatment. Catching cancer early and can't get treatment. Because the hospitals are awash in unvaccinated spreadnecks, COVIDiots, and mask holes. But they get preferential treatment as far as the monoclonal antibody therapy is concerned. That's infuriating. And it's so dead wrong. Literally, dead wrong. But anyway, back to Dr. Cross chatting with Victor Blackwell.
You know, it's a very difficult situation. On one hand, we are saving lives potentially by giving the monoclonal antibody to the unvaccinated population because they are certainly at the highest risk of dying. On the other hand, we are basically rewarding them for choosing to not get vaccinated.
Bingo.
Prolonging this horrible pandemic, the worst public health crisis of our time. So it's such a difficult thing that healthcare professionals are going to unfortunately encounter. There is not an unlimited supply of monoclonal antibody right now. At least the immunocompromised population should get this monoclonal antibody, according to the National Institutes of Health and also the state of Tennessee. Yeah. But I, as a physician, if I see a patient who has multiple comorbidities, even if they've been vaccinated, if I worry that they are at much increased risk of severe disease, I think I would give the monoclonal antibody. And if I didn't, I would not be able to live with myself. And I think many of my colleagues feel the same way as I do.
And, you know, there are some people who are, you know, so anti-vaccine or anti-vaccine mandate in this case that they become quite belligerent about it. There's a store in Nashville with a sign there in Nashville, Tennessee, that says, force a shot on us. We've got the video, speaking of a shot of the vaccine. We'll force a shot on you. And you see the barrel of a gun facing back if we wait for that video to show that portion of it. I'd imagine it's difficult as a health professional for people who have been fighting the vaccine, fighting this option, the best protection, to then reserve this life-saving treatment for them.
You know, it's been really difficult for physicians and healthcare staff on the front lines, seeing unvaccinated patients come in and critically ill, taking up an intensive care unit bed, taking up a ventilator, when it was largely preventable. We have seen so many protests around the state of Tennessee. Only 44% of our population is vaccinated, which is one of the worst. We're one of the lowest states in the country. We're using
so much
a
for
ton
being
of
volunteers,
antibody,
right?
Just like six other states in the South, because our vaccination rates are so low. It is so frustrating. And I feel that this has been made a political issue from the beginning instead of the health crisis that it is.
She's solid. And she's absolutely right. What was the story from a couple of 3 weeks back? Turns out Governor Monkey Up, Ronna Death Sentence in Florida, said, well, you don't have to worry about the vaccine because we got lots and lots and lots of Regeneron. And then it turned out that he was deeply invested in Regeneron. And they're over in maggot world, and generally speaking, the cesspit of right wingery. They're acting like Regeneron is an actual cure. It isn't. It isn't at all. Lee in New York noting, well, of course, we can't let stupid Republicans die. and it's not denial of care, it's triage. So according to the triage standards generated by the National Institutes of Health, unvaccinated people go to the head of the line ahead of people who were responsible and took the goddamn vaccine and may yet be in extremis. Now, that number is still small, but unvaccinated mask holes are gobbling up the monoclonal antibody treatment at the expense of people who were vaccinated. It's sickening. It's infuriating. As Steve put it, so two people are in a car accident. The one who wears a seatbelt gets to wait until the one who didn't jumps the line. I hate these people. The selfishness of these people is disgusting. Note I didn't say astonishing or unbelievable, because it's not. What I heard the doc in Tennessee say was that we are telling people we will prioritize the unvaxxed. We really won't, in reality. Well, I didn't hear what you heard, because I've already heard an account from one person that I personally know. You know, this isn't my next door neighbor's aunt's cousin's next door neighbor's boyfriend who got hit who was on a motorcycle and got hit and died, and they said it was because of COVID. This is someone that I know. This is someone, you know, that I've actually seen with my own eyes, who got the vaccine and who is in the midst of an ugly little breakthrough infection and cannot get monoclonal antibody treatment and is in a bad way. But there's one other little nugget in Dr. Cross's conversation with Victor Blackwell that you might find interesting. Second worst rates in the country, Tennistan. Every county in Tennistan is now blood red on the map.
And that really is the main issue we are facing. This is not a political issue. This virus kills, it's killing people every day. And I just wish that the people would listen to us, the healthcare professionals.
Speaking of, something tells me she's not going to be on the governor's task force much longer.
The politics of this, I mentioned at the top that you're a member of Governor Bill Lee's COVID task force, and I know that you disagree with a lot of the decisions that the governor has made. Are you on this task force just a lone voice out in the wilderness? Are there other detractors, and is the governor's office listening to you all who disagree with him?
Good questions. The governor's task force has not met since the summer of 2020.
Well,
so
now,
it is very difficult to say if I am the lone voice. I have been speaking up recently because I'm very worried about the executive order that the governor issued allowing parents to opt out of the mask mandates in schools recently, a few weeks ago. And I have continued to speak out because I feel that the people in the state of Tennessee are being put in harm's way with some of these recommendations that have been made. And the fact that I feel that being against a vaccine mandate is even putting people in harm's way. So am I the lone voice? I might be. I was appointed by Governor Lee to the task force, but I may very well be the lone voice.
Yeah, and you can be fired by
it. Listen, if y'all haven't met in a year, is there still a task force? You may just be a task force on letterhead only. Dr. Sarah Cross, thank you so much for your time.
Haven't met in over a year. Because, what, if they met, Nitwit Nero, COVID Caligula would have a sad? Or is Governor Bill Lee as afraid as anybody else is, you know, of the people who run around? Did you note the description of that one sign? You try to force us to take a shot, we got a shot for ye. Second Amendment remedies, damn it. Dr. Sarah Cross's life is probably at hazard right now. And yet she has stayed at her post. she has done her job. Well, I don't know. Let's ask the community. Steve in New York says, am I the only one who, subject line, Tennessee, am I the only one who is literally starting to shake with rage? That's an emotion with which I am familiar out of all of this. Rage is, of course, part of the word outrageous. And it is outrageous that people who were so selfish as to not even get the vaccine are at the head. And if I'm wrong about this, let me know. I have a feeling the Horn Family Community Congregation ad hoc research department's already on this. Because it sounds right. And like I said, I have one personal account that I'm aware of. If you had a loved one who got a breakthrough infection and was denied monoclonal antibody therapy, life-saving therapy, because that drug was being kept for some spreadneck who couldn't be bothered to get the vaccine, how outraged would you be? What would that drive you to consider? What would that make you think? How would you respond? If you were watching a loved one struggle for life, knowing there was a drug that could make them well, but had been denied to your loved one so that some COVIDiot could have it instead. Do you throw things? Do you break things? Do you go, berserk? Because over on the spreadneck side of the equation, berserk is something they're downright good at. Enter Chad Stalens in Wichita Falls, Texas. It's about a quarter to noon Central Time Monday when Chad Stalens went swanning into Kell West, which is a hospital. And, of course, you know, being a maggot, he didn't have a mask on. So a security guard looks at Chad Stalens and says, it's hospital policy to wear a mask inside. And when the guy didn't do, when Chad Stalens didn't put on a mask, he said, it's hospital policy to wear a mask inside. Chad Stalens continued to ignore the security guard, no matter how many times the security guard repeated, it's hospital policy to wear a mask inside. And finally, the security guard confronted him, at which point Chad Stalens began trying to poke him in the face and became more and more outraged. Until such time as unmasked, mask-hole, COVIDiot, spreadneck Chad Stalens bit the guard's thumb. Bit the guard's thumb all the way to the f***ing bone because he was asked to wear a mask. Let that just settle in for a minute. Over being asked to wear a mask. Damn near bit his thumb off. Jesus God. Well, the police did come along and arrested Chad Stalins, 37 years old. Probably has an identical IQ. Charged Chad Stalins with assault on a public servant, and that's a third-degree felony. And it's his second offense. In 2018, Stalin was convicted of assault when he grabbed a woman's thumb and bent it backwards. He's got a thumb thing, I guess. It remains to see whether it be seen whether the charge will stick and whether, if convicted, anything will be done to him. So the spreadnecks, the mask holes, the covidiots, the maggots, they have no problem letting their berserk flag fly. Meanwhile, I guess on our side, you know, we'll just—I don't know. Maybe we will protest strongly if one of our beloveds is fighting for every breath and denied a life-saving antibody therapy. You know, the antibody therapy that saved Nitwit Nero's miserable life. The antibody therapy that Greg Asbot in Texas, even though he was vaccinated, got on lickety-split when he found out he had the Rona. Compare this with the massive paranoia of that piece from John Nolte that we discussed in yesterday's program. The liberals are trying to kill us. It's a plot to kill conservatives and conservatism in America. Jesus. Meanwhile, as Sparky just informed me, up in Alaska, things are getting awful-er. The governor of Alaska, Mike Dunleavy, in conjunction with officials from his Department of Health and Social Services, announced today that crisis level standards of care are being implemented for everyone in Alaska. Yeah. Just this week, Alaska hit the highest new COVID-19 case rate per capita in the United States, replacing West Virginia. And so that means that because of staffing issues and because of the influx of, and you know, Alaska is mostly a Republican state, so of course they're having problems. Adam Crum, who's the Commissioner of Health and Social Services for Alaska, made a statement, and he said it provides a health care framework for health care providers to be able to decide who gets treatment and who doesn't. It's an addendum, this policy is. Guidance to Alaska's hospitals, this is a quote, guidance to Alaska's hospitals, healthcare providers, and local health authorities in support of crisis standards of care should they be needed for a facility or community. Adam Crum went on to say, let me be clear. This is not a disaster declaration nor a mandate and does not require any new legislation. The goal of this addendum is to provide support and guidance to our state's health care providers as they continue to care for Alaskans during these unprecedented times. There's been an influx of hundreds of traveling medical professionals who have gone to Alaska to help in health care facilities because they are overwhelmed. Nearly 300 registered nurses, more than 100 certified nursing assistants, patient care technicians, will arrive soon in Alaska, with the state having entered into an $87 million contract between the state and the federal government's General Services Administration. All brought about by staff, bed, and equipment shortages. Apparently, sometimes when you hear that phrase that there is that a hospital is out of beds, there may actually be empty beds. But what there aren't are enough people to take care of the people in the beds. And so that means that Alaska can triage. And if, well, as has proven to be the case, people who didn't get a vaccine when people were begging them to, maybe because, like John Nolte said, they'll feel like cucks or feel like they've been owned by the libs, well, they're going to get privileged treatment ahead of people who did the responsible thing. The article from the Anchorage Daily News notes that one patient died because there wasn't a bed available in Anchorage. Yeah. And they're doing this after they've already shut down non-emergency surgeries. They're already keeping people in emergency rooms because there's no bed to put them in the hospital proper. So one person at least has died. More, most likely, will die. And at some point in time, it seems like there has to be something in the way of what's that fetish phrase of the Republicans? Personal responsibility. God damn it. Lee in New York says, hospital policy to wear a mask. I would prefer it go this way. Hospital visitor repeatedly told to wear a mask, refuses to comply. Security takes the visitor to the ground. Injuries result. Hospital visitor gets a mask involuntarily and gets admitted with the COVID patients. I got no beef with that. What does the Bible suggest? This being prayer meeting Wednesday. Lee notes, what does the Bible suggest for the unvaccinated? How about this? Leviticus 13:45. Being unclean, he shall dwell apart. His dwelling shall be outside the camp. Social distancing. How about that? In the Bronze Age. God, even people who didn't understand why it rained could figure out that much. What the monoclonal antibody policy from the National Institutes of Health means? Well, Steve points out, unvaxxed will get the Regeneron over vaxxed. These unvaxxed will necessarily spend more time in the hospital and take up more advanced equipment and take up more hospital beds for a longer period of time. As a result, not just COVID patients, but those needing emergency care will not get it, which will increase excess deaths. And chances are, if the unvaxxed person recovers, they will not get vaxxed, which means more infections, which means more variants, which reduces vaccine efficacy, causing the previously vaxxed to be more susceptible to infection. One can see the exponential growth as a very reasonable result, yes. And an official for the World Health Organization announced today that, yes, in fact, the Delta variant is the dominant strain worldwide now. And so we're kind of back to what Paul from Parts Unknown was talking about with his lottery ticket analogy. COVID-19, the Delta variant in particular, is buying lots and lots and lots and lots of lottery tickets. Raising the chance, and remember, the jackpot in this analogy is mutation. And so with all those chances, more mutation will take place. As Steve pointed out, saying, which means more variants. And Steve sends along an apology. I'm sorry I'm emailing so much. And then all caps, and every motherfucking one of these people, I double fucking dog guarantee you, would brag to you what a Christian they are. Robin, I'm seldom this angry because the people that actually did do the right thing will die at the expense of those who didn't. My advice to Mr. McNulty, to paraphrase Fat Fuck Hagee, die! As opposed to starve! It's a hell of a thing, isn't it? Meanwhile, back in Florida, Stan, Governor Monkey Up, Rona death sentence, got himself a new Surgeon General this week. Yep. Because the previous Surgeon General was saying things like, well, you know, we need to be wearing masks. So Governor Monkey Up, the man who became governor by the narrowest of margins, with the assistance of real live, no kidding, Nazis. Well, Governor Monkey Up has hired a dude to be his new Surgeon General by the name of Dr. Joseph Ladapo. Ladapo? L-A-D-A-P-O? And Dr. Ladapo did exactly what he was hired to do. He has officially ruled that parents do not have to quarantine their children if they've been exposed to somebody who's tested positive for COVID-19. Henceforward, it is optional for parents if they want to keep their kids home from school. But with them having been exposed to COVID-19, they can also just send the kid back to school, so if the kid was exposed, the kid can then, you know, if they got it, they can spread it. According to the Florida Sun Sentinel, the Orlando Sun Sentinel, the new rule wipes out a previous one that required students to quarantine off campus at least 4 days after exposure to someone with the virus. It does not alter Florida's ban against mask mandates, however, as it reiterates the previous order's requirement that parents be able to opt out their children from wearing face coverings. Face diapers! I'm getting to a point that I never wanted to reach. I don't like in myself what I am feeling. But Rona death sentence, Governor Monkey Up, is hell-bent on keeping anyone in Florida from doing practically anything to stop the spread of the disease. Maybe he's one of these assholes who's going, oh, we'll have herd immunity. No. And by the way, where at the bottom of the pickle barrel did Rona death sentence find Dr. Ladapo? Oh, he's a real Lulu. Apparently he's part of the that AstroTurf group, America's Frontline Doctors, Doctors, Doctors. Yeah. And he was even in the notorious video for America's Frontline Doctors. A 43-minute video that went around the world before the truth had a chance to get its shoes on. In that video that Dr. Ladapo appeared in, the argument was made that masks don't slow down the spread of the virus, even though there's peer-reviewed, pre-publication data that suggests that, that beyond a shadow of a doubt, that masks do slow the spread. They also said in this 43-minute pile of flaming garbage that COVID-19 is less deadly than the flu. It was an outright lie. But what you might find interesting is that in that video, Dr. Latipo, now the Surgeon General of the state of Florida, he was right there on the video with, yes, Dr. Stella Emanuel, the woman who says that demons steal men's penises and hide them under the sea, and that's why men suffer from impotence. Demon sperm, to be precise, yes, demon sperm. And that dude is now the Surgeon General of the state of Florida. Mm-hmm. Dr. Stella Emanuel went on to say that alien DNA is being used by doctors to treat their patients. Yeah. And, of course, the centerpiece of that entire stupid video was, hey, let's give everybody some hydroxychloroquine. We're all screwed, Robin. Isn't that the line we use about now? Yeah. Yeah. Holy crap. Good question, Lee in New York says, was Dr. Tenpenny not available? Oh, she's got a busy schedule, Lee. So that thing that I do, what that I say at the end of every program about taking every possible precaution, it's getting more imperative by the moment. Because it seems, especially if one lives in a maggot state, particularly if one lives in a maggot state, we're on our own. Yeah. And not only are we on our own, in those maggot states, the governments are actually actively working against the people who did the right thing. Steve continues and says, I hate to say this, but I can see this happening. Just as you mentioned earlier, I can see the vaxxed going berserk to the extent of getting physically violent and worse. And citing self-defense or a stand-your-ground defense in harming those who are unvaxxed, taking up beds and hospital resources. Please, Robin, tell me I've gone off the deep end and just engaging in crazy talk. I can't tell you that because I don't think you necessarily have. Like I've begun to wonder, and I hate even whispering this in the ear of the universe, it feels like it has been inordinately long, given the nature of this country. It has been inordinately long time-wise, since we've had some sort of horrifying mass shooting. Because remember, every day the NRA roulette wheel of death is spinning, 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 spinning. Round and round she goes. Where she stops, nobody knows. But stop it will. Oh yes, stop it will. And it will be horrifying. And what happens? What happens if, for instance, what happens if this happens, if it occurs in a maggot state? What happens if it occurs in a state where hospitals are already beyond capacity to deal with anything in the way of an emergency? What happens if it's in a weirdly unseasonable tornado somewhere in Alabama or Tennistan? We're not near done with hurricane season. What happens if another monster blows up and people need critical care in the wake of a hurricane and can't get it because the COVIDiots, the mask holes, and the spread necks are consuming all of the capacity? What happens? Is it just another shitty news item on just another shitty news day? And we just sit there and say, well, yeah, I guess we got to take it. Even a kicked dog will bark. And if you kick a dog for so long, eventually... I hate the imagery of that. Jesus, I do. But animals, there are abused animals out there. We know. But eventually, it will bite. It'll get to the point where it can't stand it anymore, and it will bite. Now, not shit was done to the maggots. Not a damn thing was done to them. And they still became so infuriated that they tried to overturn constitutional governance in the United States on January the 6th, 2021. For no good reason at all, save the fact that they had been weaponized by people, Republicans, maggots, followers of COVID Caligula. They'd been weaponized for nothing more than those people's vainglorious avarice. God. This is there's potential for a level of horror out there that most of us aren't thinking about, but some of us are, and that's why I bring the issue up. The maggot states, the Confederate states, are stewing in, our buddy Trey in Kentucky Stan came up with the term, they are stewing in a COVID crock pot. Or maybe it's not even a crock pot, maybe it's a COVID pressure cooker. And the damn thing's about to blow. Trey says, but, well, I get it. Oh, yeah. Yeah, what's the line, what's that Rolling Stones song line? About to blow a 50-amp fuse. Yeah. The Washington Post reported on those crisis standards there, too. It's not just Alaska, apparently. No, it's not. Oh, and by the way, this is just a little thing. But there, the FBI director, who is under fire, and by the way, this is just a quick one. And I am not trying to in any wise downplay or diminish the grief and horror of the murder of Gabby Petito. But I will point out that it sure did jump all over the for-profit media, didn't it?
and the desperate manhunt being mounted by the FBI. Yeah. Yep, there went the stream. Sorry about that, but we're back now. I don't know how long ago. I don't know how long ago it disappeared. Come back to the air, Robin. The keys to the Tesla are on the line. I didn't know it had. Teslas have keys. No, what I was saying when I didn't realize the stream had buffered up and died is that the potential for violence in this country is ever present, but looming in horrifying ways. And the FBI, and what also, because, you know, buffered up and died. The FBI is desperate after the pasting that the FBI's reputation took over its treatment of the Larry Nassar case and the damning testimony offered by the four Olympians, including Simone Biles, Allie Raisman, Michaela Maroney. I apologize for not remembering the fourth name. Talk about it, you know, that's too, and then there was the story about the how many thousands, 4,500 was it, 3,500 tips about Brat Kavanaugh that the FBI just blithely turned over to the Nitwit Nero administration so that all those tips could be disappeared. The FBI desperately needed some good PR, and they found it in the Gabby Petito story. Sickening, heartbreaking, ugh. Just breaks my heart. And so it was that today, FBI Director Chris Wray appeared before the House Homeland Security Committee. And he said that there's an FBI report due out on right-wing extremism in the United States. And he pointed out in his testimony that most Americans really couldn't wrap their heads around just how much the threat, how big the threat is from right-wing extremist groups. You know, maggots, Republicans. He said most people couldn't wrap their heads around it because it was the previous report wasn't even something that the general public, could see. The chairman of the committee, Representative Benny Thompson of Mississippi, was questioning Chris Wray, and Ray said, certainly as I understand it, some of the information requested, and this gets overly involved for this setting, involves information that at least wasn't maintained in earlier years in the form that I think, most helpful. We're trying to work through that with your staff. Trying. Too bad Yoda wasn't there to testify alongside FBI Director Wray, because he said there is no try. There is only do or not do, and so far the FBI has been going gangbusters on the not do portion of that expression. Yeah. But what he was responding to was the fact that Chairman Thompson and other members of his committee want to know how many domestic extremist threats and threats from racist groups there are. And by way of an excuse, and what an excuse it was, FBI Director Wray, who is getting rather close to the time when, just for the sake of his own decency, he really should resign, and others should resign behind him. Well, FBI Director Chris Wray says, we can't really come up with that answer for you, Chairman Thompson, because, well, there's just so goddamn many right-wing threats in the to the people of the United States that we can't keep up with it enough to generate a report, because every time we try to generate a report, we wind up with more damn data. Now, he made it sound a little bit more official and government-y, but you get the idea.
Director Wray?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I guess I would say a few things. First, starting back in June of 2019, I elevated racially and ethnically motivated violent extremism to a national threat priority, which is our highest threat priority level. And I think that has already shown fruits in the fact that we have effectively doubled the number of domestic terrorism investigations and arrests since that time. We had about 180 domestic terrorism arrests last year. We've had over 600 now in connection with January 6th alone. I would say that we have also created a domestic terrorism hate crimes fusion cell to help increase the level of intelligence and information flow that goes out. Certainly from a lethality perspective, as you noted, Mr. Chairman, we have seen those kinds of domestic violent extremists responsible for the most lethal activity over recent years, although I would add that in 2020, we saw a significant uptick in lethal action and violence by anti-government, anti-authority violent extremists to go along with the racially motivated violent extremists. And from a perspective of pushing out intelligence, as we did before January 6th, we've been pushing out dozens of intelligence products to our federal, state, and local partners to highlight the threat.
Thank you much. Director Wray, Congress passed the Data Act. And as you know, we have been trying to make sure that the FBI produce information on domestic terrorism in a manner that not just members of Congress, but the public at large can understand what's going on. We finally got a report subject to the NDAA legislation, but there's still some gaps in terms of data missing from 2009 to 2019. Can you commit to helping close those data gaps in that report so that members of Congress and the public at large can have the understanding necessary about the growing problem with domestic terrorism in this country?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, you can count on us to work with you and your staff and the committee staff to try to produce more information to be more responsive to those requests. Certainly, as I understand it, some of the information requested, and this gets overly involved for this setting, involves information that at least wasn't maintained in earlier years in the form that would be, I think, most useful. So we're trying to work through that with your staff. And certainly I recognize that the earlier report took longer to get to you than it should have. Some of that, in all fairness, was in part due to the pandemic and the fact that the people that we really needed to rely on for that work were both strained by the pandemic, but also working on the significant domestic terrorism caseload that, as I testified a few minutes ago, mushroomed last year. So we're going to work with you, and we will try to see if we can get you more complete information.
Thank you very much. Chair recognizes as a ranking member of the full committee, gentleman from New York.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, we'll take a powder on the ranking member because, you know, burble, 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 QAnon, burble. Right. Yeah. No, what does that say? Oh, well, Mr. Chairman, we'd love to get you that report. We'd love you to get you the end. But God damn it, the right-wing racist extremists won't slow down long enough for us to generate a report because, well, it's just a giant game of right-wing neo-Nazi Klansman racist neo-nationalist Proud Boy Boogaloo Incel Tactical Command Headquarters Executive Staff whack-a-mole. Every time you pop one of them, another one comes up out of another hole, and well, we've just about worn our little carnival mallets out on them. I mean, isn't that just about it? Because it is. It's pretty much it. The FBI says it can't do the job that Congress asked it to do because they're so eat up with God. This country's so goddamned eaten up with right-wing terrorism that they're just overwhelmed. Now, do we believe Chris Wray? I tend to believe him. In another universe, perhaps this would just be a cheap and transparent ploy for more FBI funding. And, of course, there's no such thing as enough in budget terms for the FBI. Gimme, where any law enforcement budget is concerned. It's like maintaining... I don't know. It's like maintaining cataphracts during the Crusades could drain a country dry. But I tend to take him at his word. The FBI is huge. It's a law enforcement behemoth in this country, and when the FBI tells you that we are so chock-a-block with right-wing Nazi neo-nationalist, fascist, proto-fascist, brown shirt bully boys and thugs and killers, insurrectionists, that they can't keep up. What was the number? More than 12,000 people, was it, that attended and participated in it to some degree or another in the insurrection against constitutional governance in the United States in January 6, 2021? How many of them have been charged? How many of them prosecuted? How many of them are going away for much of any time at all? As opposed to being, say, given, 15 minutes of fucking community service. Of course we've got an explosion of domestic terrorism in this country. Of course we do. They are funded. They are well funded, as we are finding out. And they have no motivation not to. We found out in yesterday's program that it's actually goddamn good business. Fucking neo-Nazis in this country have a goddamn payroll. Sorry, a lot of cussing going on now. I apologize. They got a payroll. Jesus, I wonder if they got 401ks. And good health care. And because of our fetishized approach to the First Amendment, we can't do much about them. Oh, well, the right-wing domestic terrorist extremists you have always with you, right? I mean, it's Wednesday. I don't know. How do we come out of this? You, any suggestions, any answers? Those are not rhetorical questions. How do we get out of this? How do we get past it? Or do we just not? The director of the FBI just said we can't keep up, which means that there's likely a shit ton of domestic terrorists flying under the radar, getting ready to do something awful, something horrifying, something that even beggars our ability to imagine the degree of horror. all those years, all the that treasure we spent on trying to make sure that planning for the last terrorist attack, when the greatest threat that this country faces comes from within its own borders. And they tell us who they are, and people like Chris Ray go, what? And they catch the, I mean, let's give them credit. They catch the stupid ones. They catch the ones that are dumb enough to get caught. Or every now and then they'll cook up a scheme. There's a documentary out there about the, where were the guys from? South Florida. And the FBI conned them into saying, yeah, sure, we'll blow up whatever building we want to bleed up, sure. But January 6th damn sure happened. All the right-wingers went, well, where was Nancy Pelosi? Fuck that. Where was the FBI? Where was the massive the massive law enforcement infrastructure that we spend so godforsaken much money on? What did it buy us on January the 6th? And we're once again teetering on the brink of fucking insolvency. And what are the Republicans saying now as far as the debt limit, debt ceiling bill in the Senate? They're saying, well, you know, I mean, they want to pass Biden's $3.5 trillion infrastructure plan with by reconciliation. They can do this, too. But they know. They know what that means. That means that once again Joe Manchin and Kirsten Curtsy Cinema get to play Queen of the May and fuck America hard. That's just a bad joke.
You'll need to pass this by reconciliation.
I hate how good my Mitch McConnell impression is getting. Ugh. Makes me feel like when the program's over, I need to go and shower with bleach. Yuck. You know, not counting the part of the program where I was talking and nothing was going out, I've been filibustering for about an hour and 38 minutes. If you've got some sort of an answer, if you have something in the way of a solution, this would be a great time to bring it forward. Hide not thy light under no bushel. And because you know, the script is already out there. We know how this is played. Somebody will do something awful. The country will be gripped in horror. And somebody will stride to a microphone and say, well, you know, this isn't really who we are, when it goddamned well is. Cannibalism in Wichita Falls, Texas. Thumb biting. I guess the security guard in Wichita Falls should just count his blessings. Because dude didn't turn around and use his freedom protector to turn him into chutney. He just tried to bite his thumb off. But, you know, it starts with thumb biting. It winds up with, you know, bullets flying. Wonder if they took Mr. Thumbbiter to Burger King. God. family in New York says, of course your McTurtle is good. You came out of your shell. Weary, weary little llama climbing the Andean passes. Yeah. We don't pass this by, Steve says. Normally, I'd be ashamed to say or write this, but I'm not anymore. Hopefully, COVID will kill off sufficient numbers of the unvaxxed maggots Republicans to seriously cripple their movement. I don't know if that's possible. With his tongue firmly planted in his cheek, Steve added, what we need to do is unite and be bipartisan. Yeah. And of course, if the FBI does get around to releasing the report, there will immediately be a massive hue and cry from from the maggots, from the Republicans. They're unfairly targeting people who are just God-fearing, America-loving Republican patriots. You know, never mind the fact they tried to overturn the government and wanted to hang Mike Pence. I mean, people's passions just kind of get out of control. They're willing to kill over taking a vaccine. They're willing to put their own children's lives in jeopardy. And you know what? We feel bad about saying things like, let them die. They will giggle and hoot and celebrate and dance in the streets when vaxxed people start dying for want of monoclonal antibody therapy. And then there's a convicted felon and arguably traitor to the United States, former general and former national security advisor to nitwit Nero, Michael Flynn. He showed up on a QAnon podcast because it's a good dollar. Kind of like we had the clip from Lawyer Squidney yesterday, Squidney Powell with the angels on her shoulders, hustling her election fraud scam. We had a story a couple of days ago about the fact that some researchers are working on a COVID vaccine nasal spray, which would be brilliant and hopefully get even more people immune to the disease. And the maggots get hold of that and go absolutely there's that word berserk again. Although this is more cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs bananas. You ever have bananas on Cocoa Puffs? Really good. The chocolate, the banana. Stir in some Reese's Puffs and super frosted sugar bombs for breakfast. Sorry. So there's Mike Flynn on a QAnon podcast. Get the hockey puck for this one. No, really, get the hockey puck.
I got to put, you know, somebody sent me a thing this morning where they're talking about putting the vaccine into salad dressing or salads. Oh. Have you seen this?
Yes.
Have you seen this? I mean, it's, and I'm.
Salad dressing, Mandrake. Vegetarian's salad dressing. Fix me a rainwater and grain alcohol and whatever it is you limeys drink. Salad dressing. Vaccines and salad dressing. They're going. Mike Flynn is one spirochete away from starting to talk about the precious bodily fluids, if he hasn't already.
I'm thinking to myself, this is the bizarro world, right? This is definitely the bizarro world. So there's the seriousness of what this professional realized he was doing wrong, and he's now, you know, he's found a new way. And then there's the there's just the laughability on the other extreme that people are, I mean, these people are seriously thinking about how to impose their will on us in our society, and it's taking away your freedom of choice.
They know exactly. better.
Yeah. So to recap, by trying to keep these goddamned idiots, these fools from dying, we are trying to impose our will on them. Salad dressing. Well, I knew somebody had to go there. Salad dressing? So I get to toss my salad with the Pfizer blue cheese? Yes, Steve, apparently so. And Matt in San Francisco, salad dressing? Maggots don't eat salad? Un-American. Damn right it is. Oh, and Matt adds, and this is cowbell stuff. Yeah, that's a vigorous cowbell. Nazis, racists, domestic extremists, terrorists. They have 401 KKKs. I told you, wasn't that beautiful? This is the moment. Yeah. Thank you, Matt. 401. Yeah, we've got a very nice benefits package, and we got health care and. We got a 401 KKK. Of course you do. Of course you do. Woo! That was Joey and Giraffe worthy. Somewhere there's a delighted couple of little giraffes. And by the way, just because the program got off to such a bizarre start, Autumn and Eve. Sorry I missed yesterday, Joey writes, but I'm helping Jeffrey prepare to embark on a major move in his life. More on his monumental move later. However, for now, I would like to salute the great rock group REM, as it was on this day 10 years ago that lead singer Michael Stipe from Athens, Georgia, ended the band's 31-year run. Jeffrey sings out, "Yes, Michael Stipe disbanded the band, and it was the end of the world as we knew it. Then Michael Stipe created the eponymous service that we use today for audio and video hookups, such as Friday on the Front Porch with Robin on Friday nights. Michael Stipe sold his invention to some computer geeks and moved from Athens, Georgia, to a villa in Athens, Greece, where he now lives happily ever after." No, Jeffrey, no. I think maybe you have a few facts a little confused. However, that's okay, because you're far better as a giraffe than every Republican plebeian out there, considering they're all duped and have been badly brainwashed by unscrupulous, evil, avaricious political potentates. It appears the minion morons have been outfoxed by Fox. Well, indeed, Junior. Indeed. Joey says, "I really enjoyed the band REM, and one of my favorite songs was the tune they performed with the B-52s, Shiny Happy People." Also, B-52s of Athens, Georgia. Mm-hmm. However, by far my all-time favorite tune from REM was What Is the Frequency, Kenneth, a song inspired by two mentally ill men who attacked Dan Rather on the streets of New York City and yelled, "Kenneth, what is the frequency?" The two men who assaulted Rather were never found, and Rather had no idea who they were or to whom they were referencing. The song by REM was about a man who could not understand the music, wardrobe, and lifestyles of the youth of the 80s. On the other hand, REM's song Losing My Religion was not about anybody giving up their faith or religious beliefs, but rather losing my religion is just a term used in the South to emphasize when one is so exasperated that they're about to lose all civility and politeness and become furious and angry, maybe even go berserk. Speaking of religion, Robin, I was thrilled to hear you bring up the album God Shuffled His Feet. I thought I was the only person that liked that CD when it came out in the mid-90s. I thought Bradley Kenneth Roberts' deep voice was amazing, along with the orchestral sound of that group. Jeffrey leading the orchestra, of course. Yes, the Canadian alternative rock group Crash Test Dummies had a lead singer in Roberts whose melodic, booming voice was mesmerizing as Bradley Kenneth knew the frequency. Ooh, good job, Jeffrey. Yeah. I played the song over and over again just because I liked the sound of the song, but the meaning to me was powerful as well. The song starts out with the story of a boy who's badly burned in a car wreck and then turns to a girl who does not want to be seen at school because of numerous birthmarks. They both agree that no matter how bad their lives are, others have it worse, and one person in particular was the boy they knew who had religion shoved down his throat. The badly burnt boy from the car accident and his badly birthmarked female friend felt they didn't have it as bad as their friend who was indoctrinated in cult-like religion. Yes, being the very tall giraffe I am, I truly believe in a higher being, but I don't believe in organized religion.
I think lead singer Michael Stipe should change the lyrics to his song from Losing My Religion to We Should Lose All Religion, at least the organized variety.
Sweet little kid Junior is. He's being raised right. This has been Joey's Journal for Prayer Meeting Wednesday, the 22nd day of September, with Giraffery welcoming in autumn equinox, which officially arrives, or arrived, at 3:20 Eastern Daylight Time. And there's a $10 challenge on the table, courtesy of Joey and Giraffery. The Fall of Autumn, this is... the Fall of Autumn is this Eve challenge. Autumn and Eve, see what I mean? Right, yeah. Nicely done. Fall of Autumn is this Eve. Mm-hmm. So, if somebody wants to kick $10 toward the effort, we can knock down the fundraising goal, get it down below the $400 mark, because, well, the more it's just a hell of a hill we've got to climb this month, and I apologize for it, but that's how it is. Thank you, Joey Giraffery. Thank you, Junior. Jack in Shreveport says, I have God shuffled his feet. There's a box or two of CDs in my storage unit. I know. Oh, I love, you know, it's incredibly erudite, but swimming in your ocean is one of the most quirky love songs I think I've ever heard. And by the way, Jack in Shreveport notes, Flynn Salad, he says, somebody sent me something about how they are putting it in salad dressing. How much play has this salad dressing conspiracy gotten just because somebody sent Flynn some nutty bullshit? Well, that's the way it works in cue ball world. Somebody sends you something, and you don't check it out. You don't try to verify its veracity. No, none of that shit. No, hell no. You just go on a QAnon podcast, a well-funded one, apparently, and say, yeah, somebody said something salad dressing. But there actually is it's taken from a study. Because, see, real scientists are actually desperate to try to find some way to stop this thing from killing so many people. So when the story began to get legs about Mike Flynn out there talking about salad dressing, vaccination, whatever, a fact checker by the name of Mike Rothschild, not a Rothschild, yes, a Rothschild, well, he noted that scientists are trying to come up with an mRNA vaccine that won't have to be kept in an extremely cold freezer, because Moderna and Pfizer, which are the most effective, have to be kept at mind-bogglingly cold temperatures. And so a website called Study Finds has an explainer on it. And they note that they're trying to use plants to help grow the vaccine so that they can then store it at room temperature. They wrote, thanks to a $500,000 grant from the National Science Foundation, researchers are now looking to accomplish three goals. First, the team will try to successfully deliver DNA-containing mRNA vaccines into plant cells where they can replicate. Next, the study authors wants to show that plants can actually produce enough mRNA to replace a traditional injection. Finally, the team will need to determine the right dosage people will need to eat to properly replace vaccinations. So that's, I mean, it's really clever and inquisitive science. UC San Diego's Professor Nicole Steinmetz said, our idea is to repurpose naturally occurring nanoparticles, namely plant viruses, for gene delivery to plants. Some engineering goes into this to make the nanoparticles go to the chloroplasts and also to render them non-infectious toward the plants. And if you try to read that to a spreadneck, COVIDiot, mask hole maggot, you know, their eyes glaze over and roll back in their heads and all in verbal gurglag chlorahu. And, well, you know, certs have rets and mRNA. It's what plants crave. And so Mike Flynn, well, the guy who sent the thing to Mike Flynn, didn't quite get the gist of all of it, you know, and said they're going to put it in salad dressing. You know, salad dressing's good for stuff other than salad. I love to marinate chicken breasts in, you know, like Newman's Own Italian dressing. And then when you put those, and when you've marinated them that way and you put them on the smoker, they are absolutely delightful. Slice it real thin, put it, you know, between the folds of a piece of pita or the hollow, or, you know, any way you want it, but it's yummy. I mentioned Newman's Own because Christopher in Portland said, Flynn's salad dressing, is it as good as Paul Newman's? Extra blue cheesiness for me, please. Ah, shit. Now, do you fuck with Arby's horsey sauce, too? Don't fuck with the horsey sauce. I always keep extra Arby's horsey sauce in the sauce packet drawer. Yeah. Oh, well, okay, there's our answer, courtesy of Brother Deacon Asa. Absolutely. They're putting it in Russian dressing, damn it! Of course they are. Yeah. Hey, thank you, Christopher. That was really kind of you. Christopher met Joey and Giraffe's challenge. That was super kind and so appreciated. Thank you so very much. But I was pointing out a little bit ago that, yeah, if you've got something on your mind, please, you know, feel free. Oh, thank you for the salad dressing gif, Christopher. Oh, I know. That was good. Fear of salad dressing, Lee in New York points out. Not blue cheese. They will not defeat the Roquefort. Not French dressing, freedom dressing. The former guy loves Russian dressing. ExxonMobil needs a subsidy to make oil and vinegar profitable. Yeah, won't you just eat a little bit of the chocolate-covered cotton, Yossarian, please? No. Anyway, jump in. This is Conversation Radio, and I hate to monopolize the conversation. The stress line, of course, is 844-843-4676. 844-THE-HORN. And you can get in on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, which someday will be changed to Robin Kincaid as soon as I figure out how to do it. You're welcome to jump in and share any ideas, observations, hopeful optimism that you may yet maintain. That would be great. So, I mean, on the good news front, you know, they're working on that just blows my mind. Getting plants to grow the vaccine is brilliant. Nasal spray, that works too. Yeah, that's absolutely true. And it's particularly helpful in regard to people like Mike Flynn.
just need you to shut the fuck up, cause nobody asked you, bitch. I need you to shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Just shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Bow, bow. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow.
Yeah, precisely. You were. Yeah, thank you for reminding me of that, Jeremy. Thank you. Okay. Randy Radar recommending the large bottle of Walmart brand's Great Value Zesty Italian Dressing. Probably comes from the same factory that makes the Newman's Own. Wouldn't surprise me in the least. I love that. I love Italian dressing. So, anyway, we're into the third hour of the program. We are now down to $380 to go to come up even. That means $80 of yesterday, and then the $300 for today. It's wonderful. But it is, after all, prayer meeting Wednesday. Hold on. What's that? Jack in Shreveport with a note. Republican propaganda amplification on social media. Well, let's take a look at Facebook specifically. Zuckerberg and Facebook are working on schemes to shove pro-Facebook propaganda into the top of people's news feeds. They call the scheme something like the Amplify Project. The worst thing about the right-wing's use of social media, in my mind, is the right-wing infrastructure that could take any new tidbit of slime and amplify it extremely quickly with an incredible spread out. So Zuckerberg is basically doing that with his own propaganda. He wants to be separated from the problems of Facebook and be seen as a nice guy. I don't know who out there sees him as a nice guy. No. You can tell he really isn't interested in testifying in Congress. No, the bit that they do on Saturday Night Live where they essentially paint him as some sort of failed Android experiment is pretty much spot on. Yeah. By the way, says Randy Radar, pudding is poison. Okay. But like I said, it is prayer meeting Wednesday, and we do have prayer meeting stuff out there. And, the usual suspects. Right. Thank you, Jeremy. We are now down to $370 to go. $370 to get even thus far. Let's check in with Pastor Kent Christmas. That really is his name. Pastor Kent Christmas. He runs a gospel shop in Nashville called Regeneration Nashville. Because that's the way it is with these non-denomination cult churches now. They try to get... I mean, we got one here called Fresh Fountain, which, frankly, just sounds like it's... Use it for something that you don't want to talk about in public. But Regeneration Nashville... that sounds like a fucking day spa, please. But no, it's a gospel shop. And, among other things, Pastor Kent Christmas has been working hand over fist to make sure that the fools who wander into his gospel sharp emporium don't get vaccinated. I guess it doesn't bother him. Right. But, sometimes they take a break, and Pastor Christmas did. They take a break from the current craze for trying to get people to get a deadly disease. And he went back to, Pastor Christmas did, went back to the old Christian standby. Yeah. Because, of course, he did. Hockey puck. And when I say the old standby, everybody knows what that is, right?
We have all of this going on for the last couple of 20, 30 years. And while we're building the biggest churches, Never had Christians' children been more taken over by homosexuality than they are right now.
Does dude have an earring in? No, no, no. That's his head-worn mic. Never mind. Sorry. But, yeah, the children are taken over by homosexuality. Taken over. No born that way for Pastor Christmas, I guess.
If I asked each and every one of you to stand that has a son, daughter, or a niece, or a nephew, or a brother or sister that is gay, half of you would stand up in this building because it is a demonic spirit that's come after our seed. And the church that God is raising up in this hour is going to have authority over that. Listen, we are not going to tell them they're going to hell. We're not going to tell them they're scum. We're going to tell them that they're born of God, that God will set them free, change them by the power of the Holy Ghost. Put them on our platforms to sing, "Our God is an awesome God," by the power of the Lord.
And you thought I made that up when I did it. Ha! Glory. No. No, no. He's one of those. He's a hacker. And not in the computer. Yeah. You know, we're not going to tell them that they're going to hell. We're not going to tell them that they're scum. We're just going to think that and say, "Oh, God love you." Yeah, God. Yeah. Demons are coming after our seed. That's what children are. Children are just seed. And don't plant them too deep. I guess in times like these, it's at least moderately reassuring to know that the followers of the Prince of Peace are at least consistent. And we're going to have power over them. I don't know who he meant. Because, see, that actually shows you the troubles that evangelical Christianity is having now. Half the people in here would stand up if I said, "Do you have a sister or a brother or a son or a daughter or a niece or a nephew who's gay?" And half of you would stand up. And curiously, the camera pulled back, or they went to camera two or whatever it was, and lo and behold, he didn't tell them to stand up, but they started standing up. Oops. Yeah, they're going to have power. What?
It is a demonic spirit that's come after our seed. And the church that God is raising up in this hour is going to have authority over that. Listen.
Authority over that. So, you know, they'll tell you to your face that they want political power in this country so that they can destroy the people that they hate. And that is every last member of the LGBTQQIA+ community. Every last one of us. They are happy when we suffer. They are happy when we die. It brings them closer to God. And they're going to compel people to stand on the stage with him and sing some god-awful, stupid, modern pop hymn. "Our God is an awesome God." Oh, dude, awesome. Yeah. He's so awesome when little children starve. He's so awesome when little children die of COVID. So awesome. So effing awesome. Yeah. Well, there's the love of Christ Jesus for you right there. Oh, what's that, Sparky? Sparky says, our Walmart here was closed for cleaning for a day as our county is burning up with Delta COVID. Goddamn maggots. Yeah. And, you know, even within California, the portions of the state that send Republicans to the state house and send Republicans to Congress, they're the ones that... It's undeniable anymore. Republicanism is the virus. Plain and simple. There's no way around it. If you live near Republicans, you've got a virus problem. And you are, well, you're at risk. So just, you know, be careful. If they've still got, but at least they're telling you who they are if they've still got their... let's run over to the stress line, check in with Andrew in Atlanta. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, Robin. I honestly believe this, and it's really horrifying me to even say this, but unless the left, which is us, the sane people, do something extremely radical, which is, at the very least, start a major advertising, marketing, something to educate the American people about exactly what this right-wing Nazis are about. We are, seem like, determined, maybe predestined to become Nazi Germany in the 30s.
Well, I mean, they keep telling us who they are, don't they?
Yes. And I'd be really, would love to find out, I don't know there's any way to do it, for the amount of people who believe in the Nazism back in the 30s, in that time of Mr. Crazy, and the amount of people who believe in it now, were Trump supporters, what the percentage of the population is, of the two.
I think you're right across the board. And, you know, our hands are tied by the First Amendment because we have that, you know, what I keep referring to as the fetishized reading of it. And we will, you know, we will let this go on until, I mean, we have historical precedent, do we not? We can.
Absolutely, it's right there.
Yeah. I mean, we can see they will use fascism uses the mechanisms of liberal democracy, little L liberal, to take over governments and then they do away with it, and it can happen here.
Is it not in Germany?
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what happened, and all along the way they told people this is what we're going to do, and then they did it. You know, you can cite Italy as well.
Well, on a smaller level, if that makes any sense, but I heard something horrifying. I know there's some crossover. People listen to Randy Rhoads.
Oh, yes. Yes, sir.
And there's this hate group out there, Southern Poverty. I live with my high hate group. Maybe you can find this clip of them saying this, but apparently there's this organization called the American Family Christian Radio System or Association or something.
The American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi.
Yep. Well, apparently what the game plan is, like you said, I'm really hoping you can find this, but apparently what the game plan is which is really frightening to people like me and a bunch of other people at the horn, is... Their plan is once they tackle the abortion issue, get that whatever under control that there is planned for it to be, their next issue on their agenda is to go after marriage equality.
Absolutely.
And the next issue, the next one, of course, go after sodomy laws.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they have a full-on plan to make this a nation that is fueled on hate and intolerance. It's the America, yeah. It's part of making America great again in their sick and twisted minds. And you know, I'll add to that there is a campaign underway. You know, you don't have to look very far to find it, but there's a campaign underway to carve the T out of LGBT. And they're experiencing some success because the so-called TERFs, they also call it gender critical. You know, they're just rotten ass people who hate trans people. That's all they are. But the thing is, they sucker in people who consider themselves otherwise progressive. And you know, to the extent that they're having any success in carving the T out of LGBTQQIA+, what that is, that's nothing but plain old Napoleonic divide and conquer.
Remember, was it Father Niemöller?
Yes. Yeah. When they came for me, there was no one left.
Yeah.
Yeah, Pastor Niemöller.
That's happening right in front of us, right here. No matter what the issue is.
Yeah, and so you go after the most marginalized, and you work because see they're actually scared of they're terrified, and not on a theological basis or a philosophical. They are scared of the LGBTQ community because of the stunning. I mean, it was generations, God knows, but the relatively stunning success that the community has had in getting rights so long denied. But yeah, they'll tell you outright that part of their agenda is to see this gang of judicial punks and thugs and foot pads and cut purses on the Supreme Court now reverse the holding in Obergefell. And because they want to invalidate marriage equality for people who don't love the way that they think their Bronze Age Bronze Age manual tells them people should love each other, and that's, by the way, bullshit too, because it's not like homosexuality, lesbianism, bisexuality, any of those things. It's not like they just cropped up in the last 100 years. I mean, we have the word lesbian because a woman named Sappho, a Greek poet, had a sort of commune on the Aegean island of Lesbos.
Right.
And that was, you know, a few thousand years ago. A couple of thousand, at least. And
I don't know if it's an evilness or a sickness or whatever one wants to put a label on it. What the end result of this whole result is that we want to beat each other. I mean, this group is gone, to go after another group. And it's the end result of the whole fascism is that eventually, once they do what they want to do their country, they start going after other countries. That's the end result. And then we have nuclear war and annihilation. I mean, that's an ultimate result because these people want to bring about the rapture. That's what they're, is that their goal? Not these people? The end times?
Well, yes. In short, because they read their holy book, and it tells them that in the end times, there will be wars and rumors of wars, quaking of the earth, fires and floods, and tribulations, and there will be pestilences. And so they see, and after all of that, then Jesus comes down in his holy rolls and tells the Christians that they get to kill the Jews who won't acknowledge Jesus as the Messiah. They get to kill them now. And so there's actually a murderous intent, it's anybody else too, but it's specifically the Jews because, well, there's a long and really sickening anti-Semitic thread that runs through Christianity almost from jump.
And I guess the question I want to throw out there, you know, and I'll let you go with this, is to the community and you as well, maybe, I guess, how we could deal with this among our family members and friends who believe in this crap. I mean, more like family members, because we can always, you know, say the hell with the friends. You know, they're not, obviously not friends, they're insane. But family members, what do we do with them? You know, do we... I mean, both my parents are divorced. And but both of them marry that are insanity. So almost 4 years, I totally bastardized my entire family. I kind of want to deal with it. I was so angry that they would vote for what they voted for. And they still support it. You know, and where we're at now is, okay, well, we just don't talk about things. Well, what does that solve? People in Germany, again, go back to Germany. You know, what was the number? You know, what was the majority of people, my majority of people, they said, well, we're just not going to talk about things. We're just going to just go about our lives and let other people handle things and just, you know, close our eyes and pretend, you know, we're in our little world and not pretend what's not happening and not happening.
And the problem in dealing with it within our own families is that it's not unlike dealing with it with a perfect stranger. Logic, reason, arguments that are put together cogently and coherently are all useless. Because as somebody pointed out along the way, the cruelty is the point.
Right.
They like it. Because it means that it's a way, you know, like I mentioned earlier, you know, the Republicans preaching personal responsibility when, you know, that's for other people. But the fact of the matter is, as long as Republicans keep feeding their masses the steady diet of hate and othering and you know, then Republicans themselves, the rank and file, the cannon fodder in the culture wars, they never have to look at themselves. They never have to ask themselves that deeply incisive question, am I part of the problem? Am I part of it? Because no, it's always somebody else's fault. It's some woman who wants control over her reproductive system's fault. It's some gay man's fault. It's some lesbian's fault. It's some queer questioning person's fault. It's the brown people. It's the Muslims. It's the black people. It's the Asian people. And so that way they never have to question their own white privilege, and they never have to question their own fragility. Because at the end of the day, they live in fear. And they are fed a steady diet of it, and the fear motivates, and the fear gets them to the polls, and the fear gets them into the streets. The fear gets them to attack constitutional governance in the United States, for God's sakes. And so the question I think, is toward, you know, how do you pierce the veil of that toxic ideology?
It's education, educating people. And what the problem is, this whole thing, all this where we are now, is, I believe it's been a plan from the start. You know, I believe that after World War II, you know, with the whole fascism thing, the right wing knew that, obviously a lot of people don't agree with it. Like, there's business people that were all involved in that. They realized it's in fascism because it's going to look bad at us. So what they do is they go after the whole communism thing. And socialism.
Sure.
And countries that have social programs. And then it stems from that, it goes into, oh, we got to bring out the word, our word. So you have the Christian fundamentalists come out. Then, oh, then we got to get the business people involved with the money. So then we buy at the radio stations.
There you go. I mean, you.
And then.
Yeah.
Then we wait for these people to elect a moron like Bill Clinton, was going to sign the 1996 Telecommunication Act.
There we go.
Bipartisanism.
Yeah, I mean, that created that created the monster that is Rupert Murdoch.
Yes.
The telecommunication,
yes.
Because then he could buy anything and have anything he wanted, and there was no limitation whatsoever. I mean,
And the reason why, you're on a podcast, and formerly the the idiot, I'll take Lee.
Oh, yeah, you mean the dude getting the eternal pineapples? Yes.
Right. I mean, is he really a better quality entertainment? I'll say entertainment. This is a matter of this argument. Was he really better entertainment to listen to than you? Mike Malloy? Randy Rhodes?
No. Well, I mean, I know for a fact that Malloy smoked him in the ratings in Chicago.
But Randy Rhodes,
Yeah.
And that's the thing. They know that once it gets out there of progressive radio, there is no competition. So that's why they put everything they can on the thumb of the scale to make sure that all they can do is make that not happen. Prevent people from voting, prevent the word from getting out there by education. And I had this fantasy that if I win the lottery, what I'm going to invest my money into is obviously you, Mike Malloy, whoever else is out there to probably to counter this and put progressive radios out there. You know, we don't nobody has radio anymore, but we do. People still listen to it. To try to counter this, because I don't know what else we're going to be able to do as a society unless something happens, until something happens horrifically we're talking about, where people learn that way, how else is this going to change? This paradigm.
Well, yes, you're absolutely right. And I know there are people on our side of the debate who say, well, you know, there's no point in messing with terrestrial radio anymore because it's dying and blah, blah, blah. But they miss a fundamental point. The entire media landscape is in constant flux. I mean, we were talking a couple of nights ago about how, lo and behold, now if you subscribe to all of the streaming services, suddenly you've got a bill that's exactly like your cable bill. Now, it's got more portability, right. but it is what it is. And I had an odd little experience this past Saturday insofar as I fired up my TuneIn app to try to listen to the Mountaineer football game, because we all know how I am with the Mountaineers, right? And so TuneIn wouldn't let me. It wanted me to pay more money in order to have access. And sorry, no. So I turned on the radio, and I found the FM station that was carrying the Mountaineer broadcast, and I listened with extreme frustration. Well, we know that part of the story. But the point is, I went back to radio. Commercials, what have you, because it's over the air and it is far more accessible than, you know, anything that's on the internet. The internet's wonderful, but you've got to be able to afford the connection, and then, you know, most of it has some sort of a fee attached to it. And I found out the other day talking from a post of our buddy Dan Fisher, his union, IATSE, is about to it may be on the verge of going on strike because the streaming service providers that are raking in money hand over fist want to lowball the union workers who make all the magic happen. Because they say, well, you know, we're not making as much, it's not the same, and it isn't the same dynamic, it's a more monetized one. So, I guess it was more than 10 years or so or more ago now that I met with some folks that had access to money, and I said, I'm not trying to make a dollar off of you. I'm trying to tell you that if you want to change the landscape of this country, you do it one radio station at a time. And you don't have to buy up 50,000-watt clear channels. You buy a little flickering candle flame and busted knuckle, and you buy another and another and another, and you put together a network of progressive programming, and little local radio stations are actually licenses to print money. I mean, the business is harder than it used to be, but it's still as long as you're not like, you know, one of those iHeartRadio used to be clear channel stations that's getting all of its programming beamed to it out of somewhere in North Carolina. If you're actually producing local content, people will listen to it because they want to hear what's going on in their community.
And it's good radio. I mean, it's good.
Yeah, I mean,
people on there, talent. I mean, people on there,
and you build up your talent base that way. You bring people along.
Well, we had that start in this country, but 2004.
Kind of, but they...
Air America.
Yeah, but they that was run on a model that was so screwed up that we would be another 3 or 6 or 12 hours just trying to talk about how screwed up it was.
Well, apparently, my understanding is, the gist of it is, the right-winger got in there to manage it and ran to the ground.
Well, I mean, that was that. Yeah, there's that. There was a coup run on the people who originally put it together. But the biggest failing they had is that they were leasing tower time. They were buying time on radio stations. They were not trying to own stations. And you have got, you know, one of the lessons out of the flame out of Air America is that you have got to own the stations. You've got to build a network through ownership.
Yes.
And, I mean, I remember, I don't know if you go back this far with him or not, but do you remember when Malloy was on the IE America radio network?
I know of it. I was before my time, but yeah, he was. And was it then, was it the union?
That was owned by the United Auto Workers and,
yeah.
And the guy who was subsequently elected president of the UAW was elected president on his promise to shutter that thing. To shut it down.
Just think if that thing had shut down, where we would be at today with that, with other people that could have started it, this could have been a whole different ballgame that we're looking at today if that little thing there wasn't stopped.
Yeah. But it's because our side has a fundamental failure to understand the power of the medium. Because our side, and this is, you know, this is just a thing that I do from time to time, our side has a deep and abiding fascination with a concept that is commonly referred to as star-fucking. A deep-pocketed Democratic donor will give $100,000 to sit down to a plate of rubber chicken at a dinner, and then will give another $50,000 to get their picture taken with, you know, fill in the blank, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama. Okay?
Yeah, and they're not immune. Our side isn't immune from the little word called greed.
No. No, it's not. But the people who have the money seem to want to put it in the wrong places.
Right. They want to be They want to be status symbol.
Going back to the Air America example, Air America was losing $80,000 a day at its peak.
Well, an argument to that is so is Fox at its peak, but it's starting to grow.
Right, but Fox doesn't care.
Right.
But over on this side...
Look at them now, though.
Yeah, but over on this side, we count every penny. We inventory the paper clips. You know, on a grant application, you will be upbraided for the staples that you lost. Over on the other side, they don't give a damn. As long as somebody's getting the message out. I mean, look at what passes for a personality over there. Charlie Sykes? And who's that little neo-maxi zoom dweeby, the kid with the fascination? And a voice made for print.
I don't watch it anymore.
Yeah. Mark Levin, Frau Engram.
Oh, yeah.
That's talent. And our side isn't even necessarily trying to make Limbaugh money. We've got people who are actually dedicated to the ideas that they're talking about. I know one progressive broadcaster who went to an organization for funding money, and they said, "Why should we give you money? You're talking about our issues for free."
Right.
They really don't get it.
Well, they don't. That is talking about the IQ of the rich. You don't have to be smart to have money, which is pathetic.
Yeah, wealth is not necessarily an indication of intelligence. I mean, look what Dr. Bill O'Brien did here on the Horn for years and years and years. The Virtual Center for promotion of civic education, trying to explain to people how government works. And, you know, half the stuff that has befallen our country, you know, January 6th would not happen if we had decent civic education in this country. But instead, we've got right-wing broadcasters who will lie to people about how government works when it doesn't work that way. Look at the campaign to hang Mike Pence. That came from a false civics narrative that said that people or that the vice president could override the Electoral College.
Well, it's not by accident that they're getting rid of the education systems in these right-wing states, Texas, and all the rest of them.
Yeah.
I mean, it all comes together as one message. These people want to bring upon the end times of their rapture. There's nothing else I can think about what else it could possibly be that's so insane with a goal.
Well, as long as you give the interest group what they think they want, in other words, the people who pull the right wing strings are largely just economic, low wage conservatives. But you can bring in the religious maniacs by saying that, you know, if this happens and this happens and this happens, well, Jesus will come back. I mean, one of the best examples of that is the fact that the Israeli far right wing will gladly get down on the floor, get down in the mud, and waller in the sty with the evangelical Christian movement, who actually, no kidding, wants to kill them as long as they're getting the message out, as long as they're getting what they want. I mean, I remember years and years and years ago reading a story about the money going into a project to manufacture all the necessary gizmos and gimcracks that one needs when one has rebuilt the temple on the Temple Mount and trying to breed a perfect red heifer, for fuck's sake. And that took money. Lots and lots of money. And it still takes lots and lots of money. But there's that word again. It is strictly transactional. So, you know, the economic conservatives, well, you know, it'll bring Jesus back. Okay, well, we're on board. Oh, it'll save the little fetuses as they snicker up their sleeves. Because they, you know, they'll give a good goddamn about a born baby. Stuff.
Yeah, they don't care about any of that stuff, obviously.
And, you know, one of the biggest culprits is, of course, the National Ruble, I mean, Rifle Association.
Right.
They're coming to get you. They're coming to get your guns. And gun sales and ammunition sales go through the roof. I mean, now that Joe Biden's in office, you can't buy a box of 9mm pistol plinking ammo just for, you know, shooting at old soup cans. Because the right wingers keep snapping it all up because they're waiting for the revolution to come.
Because it's all a planned message to these people, to psych these people up, drive them crazy, spend money.
Yeah.
And eventually have something horrific happen.
Oh, yeah. Hey, by the way, it was Ben Shapiro I was thinking of. Brother Ekinesa just told me. Yeah, go ahead.
But the horn obviously wants to always grow and expand. And that seems to be this wouldn't be like a huge thing or not, but just an idea. And I don't know how you would do it, who you would talk to or anything like that. But I don't see any reason why could you not, like on Free Speech TV, Randy has her show from 3 to 5. And as far as I know, I don't think they have anything after that. It'd be great if you could see about getting out of that after her and put your show on there.
Well, I'm trying to get things into a position here in this teeny tiny studio space to make it more video friendly.
Yeah.
And that's the key. If I ever get to that point, yeah, that's a conversation worth having. I think Rick Smith is on Free Speech TV. Hartman isn't or wasn't Hartman on there too? And I don't know if they charge for it. I don't know if they would want. I don't know if they'd want money from me.
Well, it's all donations, for that. I mean, Randy does like teledrives or like public radio drives for funding. It's all volunteer funding, for as I know.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love that.
So Justin, you'd be great on there, and you'd educate so many people and probably double the audience, I would think, eventually.
It's amazing. No. I mean, just if I was just broadcasting onto Facebook, that brings in huge numbers.
For sure. Yeah, Facebook and YouTube, right.
And the only issue there is constantly dealing with the problem of right-wingers complaining that you violated community standards. And then you have, I mean, my friends over at Trans Talk Raw, Nikki and Terry, have been, and primarily Nikki has just been battling trying to keep Trans Talk Raw's page current and operating. Just because it's not like they're doing anything salacious or licentious. It's just that the right wing knows how to manipulate those reporting mechanisms so that they can pull content that they disagree with. Because that's another component of all of this. The right wing cannot win on a level playing field. That's why they constantly rig the game in whatever forum they're operating. That's why you've got all these voter suppression. Yeah, that's why you've got all these voter suppression laws, because they have got to keep people from voting, because otherwise the truth becomes abundantly clear that the Republican Party in the United States today is nothing but a rump party of disaffected white people.
Yes.
You know, I'm glad you brought all of this up, and I'm so glad you called.
Yeah, it's great talking to you, Robin, and stay in the good fight, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, you have yourself a great evening. Call anytime. Feel free.
Bye now.
All right. Bye now. Andrew calling from Atlanta. That was a great conversation. And, yeah, Brother Deacon Asa said, you're thinking of Ben Shapiro, the self-hating Hebrew whose MD wife has told him that a wet vagina is a disease. If you think I'm making this up, ask Dr. Google. Oh, I don't have to ask Dr. Google, because I've seen the clips. I think we even played the clip where he threw a hissy over WAP. Oh, God. And he's unhealthily obsessed with pretty trans girls, too. So, yeah. Well, it's one hang up after another with those people. Those people. Where in the Bible, Ron in Raleigh asks, in the New Testament, does Yeshua say a mumbling word about homosexuality? Don't haul out that old chestnut from Leviticus. That shit was for the Levites. They also weren't supposed to wear two different fabrics or eat shellfish. I see them down to the Red Lobster after Sunday services, stuffing their gullets with king crab legs. You mean they got king crab legs at the Red Lobster, Ron? All the poors aren't eating them with their EBT cards that are loaded with thousands of dollars of cash every month, while hardworking Texans in the first congressional district of Texas are eating nothing but beans. Yeah. Well, but, I mean, the bottom line is, no. Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi who wore a dress every day of his life, never said a word, mumbled or otherwise, about homosexuality. The closest you can get is his simple statement of fact that there are men who cut off their testicles and others who are simply born without. And it's a reference to the Sibeli, we've talked about this before, the Sibeli cult of the ancient Anatolia. What'd they call it? Ionian Greece, the Asian mainland that was largely Hellenized. Mm-hmm. That's about it. I mean, that not a word. And, of course, things like abortion were well known to the ancient world. Abortifacients. And then, like I was talking about with Scott a couple of nights ago, there was the concept of exposure. Yeah. Oh, and a little breaking news coming right toward the end of the program here. Via the Washington Post, the FDA has authorized the Pfizer vaccine in booster form for older Americans and those at high risk of illness. And there's a wrinkle to it. High risk of illness also includes those whose frequent institutional or occupational exposure to the virus put them at high risk of serious complications. And they say that the booster should be administered 6 months after the last injection of the two-shot regimen. So that would mean, if I can wrangle it, October 1st. So the Centers for Disease Control still has to recommend with greater detail who should receive the shots, given that given what we know about what the National Institutes of Health have said about Regeneron, you'll forgive me if I don't feel terribly optimistic about what those details will detail.
Right.
I don't know what comorbidities will qualify. You know, because comorbidities make it more likely that that one gets it, the Rona, that is. And you know, that's anything from obesity to high blood pressure to immune system diseases or suppressed immune systems. I got to think that they're going to take those things into consideration. The challenge for the CDC advisors, quote, is to make a recommendation that is appropriate from the public health perspective and easy to communicate. That's from Professor William Schaffner. Schaffner, who's an infectious disease professor at Vanderbilt University School of Medicine, also a liaison member of the vaccine advisory panel. Beth Bell, on the other hand, a global health expert at the University of Washington, says that the panel needs to take into account the vital importance of making sure that healthcare employees get a booster, because even a mild infection requires time off from work. They also probably won't answer the question as to whether the Pfizer vaccine can be given as a booster to people who got Johnson & Johnson or Moderna. And still no word as to Moderna itself relative to a booster. It's not quite identical, it's not chemically or biochemically identical. Back to Our God is an Awesome God. Jeremy in Vermont says, it's so awesome that my niece was tossed out of her house being bad, but more likely because she showed bi tendencies, whatever the fuck that is. And there's that loving God. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. It's been a whale of a program. Sorry about the technical issues. I hope there won't be more of those down the road. We're at 380. We'll be at 680 tomorrow. And we'll just keep plugging along and cross our fingers. And thank you. Thank you so much to everybody who jumped in to bring this down as far as it did come down. Thank you. Thank you so much to Joan. And thank you to Rico. Thanks to our 22nd day of the month subscribers. Thank you, Jeremy, for jumping in. Thank you, Christopher. Thank you, Andrew. And again, Colin and Felicia. Thank you all so very much. So tremendously helpful. And thanks to all of our subscribers, Patreon and PayPal. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. You're all partial sponsors of the program, and you're why independent, liberal, progressive radio exists in this form. The reason. And thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan. Thanks, Sparky. Thank you. Sparky takes Wednesdays off. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new Fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is, of course, at headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. This is a great time to reach out to your member of the House of Representatives, especially if you've got a Democrat, and implore them to please, please, please co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the House bill, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, the AIC Act. It means the world to Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. Hopefully there will be a booster available soon. Please get it. In the meantime, wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Take it with you everywhere. Use it liberally. Maintain your social distance, 15 to 20 feet, like Paul from Parts Unknown says. Wear your mask and make sure you've got a supply of good quality masks. What mask you use makes a difference. And, you know, for God's sakes, if somebody comes towards you trying to chomp off your thumb, avoid that person like the plague, because he is. Later.